if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 328. This is our 2024 FedEx Open de France and Black Desert Championship tips podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's DP World and PGA Tour action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have in-depth betting previews for both events. We've got Le Golf National strokes gained rankings, form stats, plus, of course, new and old predictor models for all of the golf action this week. Our content is available across both events, completely free of charge. We have no paywall. On X, Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Top Class Podcast is the name of this review. Five stars. It's from Dotsy Walsh in the Emerald Isle. Hi, guys. I have the podcast on religiously every Tuesday since my friend Jono introduced me to it earlier this year. Some great insights across both tours and a great bit of banter along the way too. Looking forward to cheering on Manacero again this Sunday in Spain. What happened there? I can't remember. Hopefully, we can end the year on a high. Dotsy, thank you very much for your time and application.
Yeah, cheers, Dotsy. Manacero in Spain, I think, was that the week I was on him? So that would have been another miscut, I expect.
Yep, I jumped on him too. It was not a good week. Anyway, nice one, Dotsy.
Thank you, Dotsy. After the silence last week, it's nice to have a review. Keep them coming, people, and keep pressing that five-star button on Spotify. Just out of interest, we have now got over 200 five-star reviews in the United States, gentlemen. We've got 189 from Great Britain. And thanks to Dotsy, we now have 47 five-star reviews from Ireland. So if there's anyone over in Ireland or the UK that would like to just spare 30 seconds to write us a review to break through some barriers, that'd be absolutely fantastic. Very, very busy show. We've got some crazy events this week. I mean, the Black Desert Championship. First thing I was actually going to highlight, clearly, I'm going to highlight this before last week. The Korn Ferry final was last weekend. I just thought I'd run through some names of guys that we're going to see on the 2025 PGA Tour. We know one, Matt McCarty. He played last week quite well at the Sanderson Farms. But other names that I've just pulled out of a list of 30. Max McGreevy, he's returning to the PGA Tour. Frankie Capan, they were the top three on the Korn Ferry list. Then we've got Brian Campbell. He's returning to the PGA Tour. Harry Higgs returns. I love backing Harry Higgs on the West Coast. Here's one for you, Paul. Thomas Rosenmuller. I believe he played some DP World Tour action. But he's got promoted from the Korn Ferry. Ryan Gerard. Kevin Roy. Braden Thornberry. Paul Peterson, another, a very old DP World Tour, were there, I think 2016. Yannick Paul's brother, Jeremy Paul, has qualified. We've got Christopher Ventura. I believe he played there on the PGA Tour last season. Japanese guy, Kato Onishi. And another guy returning to the PGA Tour after a year's Korn Ferry, Trevor Kone. So there's some names for you, all playing probably, well, if they can get in the field, if you remember at the start of this year, they'll probably be playing the first event with the American Express. We've got some of those players there. I wouldn't be surprised if Harry Higgs manages to squeeze himself into the Sony Open. But yeah, interesting names there.
Yeah, it is interesting about Jeremy Paul because we've seen a little bit of him on the DP World Tour, but certainly not as illustrious in terms of his results as Yannick. But yeah, playing at a higher level next year as it stands. And yeah, very good. Very good. Paul Peterson, I was just trying to remember where he won. I've got a feeling it may have been the Czech Masters, thinking about it.
I think it was. I think it was the Czech Masters. Well done, Paul. That's impressive knowledge.
Racking my brains. But yes, I remember now because he's a relatively short hitter, which didn't really fit with the profile. But didn't he stare down Thomas Peters? Anyway.
He earned international victories at the 2016 Czech Masters and the 2018 Myanmar Open. Co-sanctioned on both the Asian and Japan golf tours. Has travelled to 6 of the 7 continents. In brackets, only missing Antarctica. Close brackets. And estimates he's travelled to 44 countries and flown well over 1 million miles.
Sounds like you're introducing him for a dating show.
It's completely irrelevant because he'll probably lose his card finishing 198th on the PGA Tour listings next year. But it's amazing what you can get sidetracked into, isn't it? That's just, he's played on all continents apart from Antarctica. Amazing stuff.
Some proper AI-generated copy there.
Yeah, well, it is the website that represents the tour in the States, so I don't know what they're doing.
Last week, where should we start? Let's start with St Andrews, shall we? The third Alfred Dunhill Links title for one Tyrrell Hatton, who instantly jumps into the top 4 or 5 for qualification into the Ryder Cup team for next season. What price was he, Paul?
Hatton, 11s or thereabouts. Yeah, no bargain really. He was a tough one to miss out on because the chance was so obvious, I guess. He'd played 3 decent rounds the week before. He finished tied 10th or thereabouts. Twice a winner. But what puts me off, particularly in those kind of events, is where you've got 2 really short price players who could equally win. And then you've got a guy who's 11-1. You've either got to make or kind of put all your eggs in that basket and just say, I think Tyrrell wins. I'm going to go deep into Tyrrell this week. And that's almost my betting card, maybe a couple of long shots. Or you kind of try and swerve it. And, in the end, it was a cracking finish. And in the end, Nicholas Coulthard could have won that tournament. If he'd have got himself up and down for birdie on the last, he could have taken it to a playoff. In effect, he had a putt from off the green to win the title. Should he have managed to nail it? I mean, it was horribly difficult, but it's by the by. The chance was there. With Nick Coulthard, by the way, I mean, he doesn't do a massive amount of actual playing nowadays, but there was a little bit of form. If you go back to the Amiga Masters a few weeks ago, and his long game was pretty good. He finished top 30 or thereabouts. Certainly enough to build a little bit of a case for around 500-1, and particularly seeing as he'd finished 6th the year before at the Dunhill Links. So I suspect there were a few punters who took a chance on Coulthard, who ultimately would have been disappointed. But if you're getting a place back on a 500-1 shot, then what's that, the equivalent of 100-1 winner or thereabouts? Can't grumble at that, really, can you? But yeah, nothing happening for me. All 3 of my players were kind of fringy each way chances going into Sunday. All of them fell apart on the back 9, which played quite tough. So nothing much happening.
Yeah, I had a couple. I had Uline. They were all, when you kept looking at the leaderboard, they'd be like 12th, 15th, and you think, oh, a couple of decent, yeah, they'd be there. Same with Noren. He finished top 20. So both of my bets finished top 20. But, yeah, they weren't going to get close enough to the top guys. There was no doubt about that.
No, just too many little mistakes. The best chance I had really was Bob McIntyre, who obviously 4 under through 8, I think it was on the final day. So he was in a position to go and get an each way place should he have finished the back nine well, but just too many mistakes, and he'd made too many mistakes, on previous days right at the business end of the rounds, which. As you know, is my pet hate, players going in and bogeying or double bogeying the final hole of the day just really, really gets my goat. So, we move on from there.
Not too many changes in terms of that top 10 that's going to the PGA Tour. The only real significant change was Nicholas Norgaard jumped above Jesper Svensson from 5th to 4th. The same top 10. So Guido is clinging on, despite many missed cuts, to the 10th place. Frederic Lacroix, Angel Hidalgo. We've then got Jordan Smith, Laurie Cantor, and Nacho Elvira Jodine. They are the closest to getting into that top 10. Interestingly, with Tyrrell Hatton, he jumps the mere, and this is what we were saying last week about if you do get a win, especially in terms of that PGA Tour qualification, he jumps 67 places to 16th in the race to Dubai. So I would assume that he will be playing at the season-ending DP World Tour Championship. Do you have to play both the Abu Dhabi to then get access into the DP World Tour Championship? Or were the rules as murky as they usually are with the DP World Tour?
Yeah, I've not seen that as a specific rule. I think you just need to be in the top 50 for prior to the start of the DP World Tour Championship. They asked Hatton about it on the green after he'd won on Sunday, saying that he was in the into the earth course, and he seemed to nod as if he was going to take that option up. So you'd assume so. He's got a good record there. He's it's worth a lot of money, isn't it? So it's worth a lot of world ranking points as well.
A lot of Ryder Cup points, Paul.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
That's the key, isn't it? His options for next season are limited. So, fill your boots while you can.
Absolutely.
On the PGA Tour, they played the Sanderson Farms Championship. Keith Mitchell, yet again, having a relatively poor Sunday when in lead, in control of a tournament and not getting the job done. Now, I like Kevin Yu. He's always been one I've kept an eye on. Paul and I will tell you that, sometimes his tee to green numbers, and we were saying this last season in his rookie season, his tee to green game was like top 15 on tour of everybody. So it shows you the kind of ceiling that Kevin Yu had. But you look at his last 2 to 3 months worth of form, it was missed cuts and 54ths. So pretty much sprang up from nowhere. Interestingly enough, with you as well, strokes gained putting. Another one of these, unbelievable. He gained almost 9 strokes with the putter. Second for strokes gained putting on the week. But yet again, at Country Club of Jackson, a long hitter gets the job done over Bo Hosler. In the playoff. Another close finish down at Jackson, chaps. Entertaining tournament, I thought. 23 under, both got into the playoff. Then at 22 under, Keith Mitchell. And at my selection, Lucas Glover.
Yeah.
And then the top 5 rounded off by Alex Smalley, Bud Cooley, interestingly enough, Daniel Berger, Mackenzie Hughes, Hayden Springer, and Michael Tjørbjørnsen rounding out the top 10.
Yeah, That was a good place from Glover from you in the end. Nice selection there. If you look at
grabbed him at 60-1 pre-off, didn't you? Got absolutely no interest in him whatsoever.
Yeah, I had a look on Wednesday and he drifted out. And as you said, pre-pod, he'd gone out to 66s just with standard terms and 60-1 with extended. So that was too good to ignore. And in the end, he had a cracking finish, didn't he? He was 5-under through the last six holes. So that's ultimately what got him the place. But if you dig into that round, he parred all of the par fives. Couldn't hit a fairway off the tee on any of the par fives, or the final three par fives anyway. And should he have made a birdie or better on any one of those, then it could have been a different story, couldn't it?
But he didn't birdie a par five on Saturday or Sunday.
It's a Saturday as well.
Wow. That is mad. He shot 16 under for the par fours, Lucas Glover. Interestingly enough, we are going to a golf course where some of the fairways this week are over 70 yards wide. So you would hope that will help Lucas Glover on the par fives this week. But anyway, we jump. Let's talk Open de France, Paul, I think.
Yep.
For me, the bigger of the two events this week.
Yeah, marginally, I suppose. It's a relatively quiet week, both sides. Calm before the storm on the DP World Tour as we head into some bigger events over, well, maybe not next week or so, but over the course of the next few weeks. But yes, Open de France, the new sponsor as well, FedEx, sponsoring it this year.
Yeah.
Relatively short field though, 126 man field, and going back to Paris, of course, where we saw the Olympics men's and women's golf competitions back in the summer. So exactly the same course that we saw adorning our screens during the Olympics. Field is a little bit down though in recent weeks, as I say. Billy Horschel still playing over here, 12-1 favourite this week. Rasmus Højgaard 16-1. Matt Wallace is playing as well, 18-1. Tristan Lawrence 20-1. So those are the relatively big names. Then we're into the likes of Jordan Smith, Victor Perez, both 22-1 now. Nicholas Norgaard, Thorbjørn Olsen 25s, 28-1 bar those players. So certainly none of the very, very elevated John Rahm, Rory McIlroy type names that we've seen over the last few weeks, but not bad nonetheless. And good of Billy Horschel to be hanging around for another week, despite the Hammers not playing, of course, with the international break. So you must be a loose end this week.
He flew EasyJet to Paris.
That'd be an experience for Billy.
He said it was it was his first experience of EasyJet.
Yeah, never again. But
I quite like that post. I thought it was quite funny.
Yeah, a short hop at least he didn't have to endure for too long, I guess. In terms of bookies, Ladbrokes and Coral, actually, they're really being aggressive on both sides of the Atlantic at the moment. They're eight places each way, fifth of the odds on the Open de France this week as their standard market. Ball Sports going eight places, a fifth of standard, of course. Betfred and Bet365 both have their each way or the additional each way options, so you can take eight places or beyond with both of those guys as well. So do shop about, plenty of options out there in terms of each way places this week. The course, the Albatross course, we've seen it for a number of years now. As I say, we saw it in the summer as well. Le Golf National, Paris in France. It's a 7,247-yard par 71 stadium course. Water everywhere. That's the biggest challenge in terms of keeping your ball dry from off the tee with your approach shots. And it can be one of those tougher tests on the schedule as well when it's played in firm and fast conditions. Now, we may not get that this week. And the reason being is we've got the remnants of Hurricane Kirk blowing through France on Wednesday. Now, Wednesday looks particularly rough, actually, over in France. I'm seeing 2 inches, probably more, of rain during the course of the day on Wednesday. So the players are likely to arrive to what could be a very soggy course on Thursday morning. Whether it's too soggy to start right at the very start, we shall see. From Thursday onwards, the weather improves, so there won't be an issue in terms of actually completing the tournament. It may just be particularly wet and soft to start with. From Thursday onwards, we might get a shower on Thursday, but other than that, it's just going to be pretty calm. Winds are down 5-10 miles an hour max, really. Pretty cool temperatures as well. You're talking 12 to 15 centigrade, so you know, mid 50s Fahrenheit at the very best. So it's going to feel particularly chilly, I think. And I guess with a soft Golf National, it could make it just a touch easier than sometimes that we've seen previous years. Certainly when they played the Olympics, it wasn't set up massively difficult. And the scoring was a little bit better. And I wonder if it's going to be a little bit better this week. We shall see. Last three winners, just to put a context of the winning scores. Rio hit Satsune last year, 14 under. Rio was a 100-1 shot last year. Guido Migliozzi in 2022 was 16 under. He was an 80-1 shot. And Nicholas Kolsarts, who played so well last week, 12 under back in 2019. So there's a gap between 19 and 22. 2019, 12 under par, 100-1. So three big price winners, 180 and 100-1, the last three winners at the Open de France. Just for reference, Scotty Scheffler, 19 under at the Olympics, was his winning total. Now, if you dig into the stats, and we are blessed with some statistics for this week, which is encouraging. All four of those men were top 15 for greens in regulation on the week. I think that is a key stat if you're looking at some of the traditional stats. Scrambling is also a strong determinant of success here. You need to keep your card as clean as possible around Le Golf National. Minimise those bogeys. Get yourself up and down when you have the chance to do so. We've also got strokes gained data back from 2019 and also for the Olympics. All four of the winners were top 7 for strokes gained approach and were top 5 for strokes gained tee to green. That's a really strong indicator of the success criteria for Le Golf National, in my view. Strokes gained approach, strokes gained tee to green. If you can add in a bit of scrambling with that as well, then you could determine who the best players are in terms of their likelihood of winning this week, I would have said. And that all fits nicely in with what we know about Le Golf National, I think. It's that kind of course that does reward strong tee to green play. Other things to pick out, recent form. I think some kind of recent form is positive. 11 of the last 12 winners had a top 20 in one of their last four starts. Now, that doesn't mean you need to come in with sparkling form. And I think that's representative of the fact that you've got these 100-1 or 80-1 winners over the last three renewals. Hizatsune was, he'd been playing some good stuff, but then came in off the back of two successive missed cuts on his previous two starts. Guido was 34th on his previous outing. Kolsarts was 64th. So gives you an indication as to why we're talking about players with those kind of prices winning the golf tournament. Course forms Patty 2. Hizatsune, he was on debut last year. Guido had missed his cut on his only other start around Paris National. Kolsarts, he had a best of 11th, but he had 12 attempts at it. So no top 10s from 12 starts. So it wasn't really smacking you around the face in terms of quality previous efforts. Tommy Fleetwood back in 2017, for reference, he had four straight missed cuts here at Le Golf National before winning. So yeah, I guess if you're looking at the combined stats on the site this week or the event stats, then use them, but take them all with a pinch of salt, I would say. Boiling it all down, decent long game is what you need this week, I think. Strong approach play, and as I say, if you can make as few bogeys as possible, that will certainly help you. I've backed four this week. I haven't gone overly mad with it. The shortest of my four is Thorbjørn Olesen at 25-1, which is still available as we speak at 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday morning. Now, you've got the likes of Billy Horschel and Rasmus Højgaard at the top of the betting. Both of them have won recently, and I guess you could argue that both of them have already peaked and maybe on the other side of that peak now. And both of them missed the cut last week at the Dunhill Links. Now, I don't put a massive amount of credence in the performance at the Dunhill Links, I must say, but yeah, neither of them was screaming at me. Whereas Olsen, he looks like he's potentially on the upward trajectory and potentially coming towards a peak. 42nd in Denmark, 33rd at the Belfry, 12th at Royal County Down for the Irish Open, then 12th last week at St Andrews. And at St Andrews last week, he did win the team competition alongside Dermot Desmond, the Irish businessman. They shot a net 59 on the Sunday to win by a couple. They beat the Hattons by two strokes in the end. So there's some good positivity going through Thorbjørn Olesen, I think, right now. And perhaps that'll push him on to some success this week. He can handle the chilly conditions. We've seen that before. We've seen him when he won the Dunhill Links back in, 2016 or thereabouts. And that was cold that week. Plenty of gloves and snoods on that particular renewal. And I think there'll be more of the same this week. He's got a decent course form as well. Second on debut here in 2011. Third in 2017. Hasn't been outside the top 20 here in his last three attempts, the most recent of which was the Olympics, where he finished 14th. And up until the 70th hole last week, he'd only made two bogeys, so he was keeping his cards particularly clean up until a little blip with a couple of holes to go. But other than that, it's looking good, and I think he should go particularly close this week. I've got another one, sub 50, which I'll go through, and then I'll bring you guys in. I was close on Jordan Smith, and Jordan Smith, if Jordan Smith wins this week, I will be pretty disappointed, but he's been found out in the market. He doesn't need much finding out in the market, does he? He tends to be shorter than perhaps he should be for the win equity that you get from him, but 22-1 now. Comes in off the back of 7th and 2nd on his last two attempts at Le Golf National and some solid recent form. So I get the reason why he's been backed. Similar kind of argument for Yannick Paul. He's around twice the price. I backed him at 40-1 with seven places. You can get 45-1 right now with the standard each way terms, which is twice the price of Jordan Smith. Yeah, the credentials are pretty similar. 8th here on debut back in 2022, 6th here last year. And for me, it's that kind of course that undoubtedly suits the game of Yannick Paul. Again, you talked about his brother. Perhaps his brother making it through to the PGA Tour will give him a bit of a spurt this week as well. You never know.
Good angle.
Third for strokes. Go on, Barry.
It was just a good angle, the psychology of his brother having a bit of success.
Yeah, and we've seen it with the Højgaards, haven't we, in the past? We've seen them win in successive weeks where one of them wins and the other one thinks, well, you know, I fancy a bit of that and go and do exactly the same thing. Full season last year, third for strokes going approach. Not quite so good this year, but things seem to be heading in the right direction. Fifth for strokes going approach last week from the recorded rounds that we had at St Andrews. So that metric, as much as you can put on it, seems to be heading in the right direction. Three top 25s on the spin now and up to 66th in the race to Dubai. Of course, the top 70, as we said, make it to Abu Dhabi. So there's reason for Yannick Paul to be attempting a big week this week, I think. Now, my other two are both north of 50-1. So let's bring you boys in now. Barry, you got any 50-1 or shorter this week?
I'm not leaving Jordan Smith alone. I'm deep at this stage, so we'll probably have to just stay with it until it happens. Or
you're holding your nostrils.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah.
We've learned over the years, haven't we? You've got to keep with it.
I'm going to oblivion with this one. The Paul shout is interesting. I think you just the psychology of it might be the thing that tips me into backing that. So purely because you've mentioned it, so now I can't get it out of my head. Other ones I was looking at, because the course is soft, he had a good week last week. I always kind of have in mind Hao Tong Li.
I was just looking at him.
Yeah, so a couple of good results here. A few years back now, but a 7th and a 21st. So there's, you know, some good memories there. So I think I'll have a little nibble of that and ensure, and I definitely will add him as a first round leader bet. And hope the conditions work out.
Yeah. And he does lock a fast start.
I'm copying one of your 100 to 1ers, and I have 100 to 1er myself, so I can hang on till Mr. Bamford has jumped in here.
Believe it or not, and this is completely, I don't know what's come over me the last couple of weeks, but I'm literally just backing big prices in this. So you might as well just crack on, Paul.
If you're leaving the sub 50 to 1 level alone,
I'm up in the 100 to 1 kind of area.
Up into the fishing for big price area. Mm. Good. I like it. Well, my other two then, Frédéric Lacroix, I backed at 55 to 1. Again, there's a little bit of 60s out there if you want the bog standard each way places. Now, after Angel Hidalgo won the Spanish Open the week before last, wasn't it? I did want to try and get a Frenchman on the team this week. And for me, Lacroix fits the bill. Born, raised and currently resides in Paris. So he'll have plenty of support this week at Le Golf National. He's won on home soil in the past. And that was back on the Alps Tour back in 2019. 4th, 8th and 6th. On three of his last visits back home to France at all levels. So doesn't mind playing at home whatsoever. 40th here back in 2019. Now you've got to bear in mind, back in 2019, he was an Alps Tour player who'd literally just graduated to the Challenge Tour. And he'd missed 4 of his 6 cuts at the on the Challenge Tour. Then played here in his home Open. And was top 20 going into the final day before shooting a 76. He is on an entirely different level now. Great experience, that. But 5 years on, I think he's an entirely different beast. Now, he won in Denmark at the end of August, of course. And Steve, you were on him that week. So we know how well he's been playing recently. And missed cut at Wentworth. I don't mind that. He finished the Irish Open off with a 66 for a top 20. You mentioned him earlier, Steve. He's that guy who's right outside the bubble on the PGA Tour card. He's sitting in 11th place right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd expect these guys that have that as part of their plan, part of their objective, part of their, you know, aspiration for the remainder of the season, they're going to come into these last few events absolutely fully focused on every single shot and every single tournament. So I can see Frédéric Lacroix going particularly well this week. And the other one I've backed, and he was the first guy I backed yesterday. He was the one I was most excited about given the price out there. And that's Matthew Baldwin. I backed him 100 to 1 each with Ladbrokes 8 places. Now, again, you can get 5 each way, 110, but I think 8 places for the 100 to 1 is a much better combination. Matthew Baldwin is the guy that really impressed for long parts of the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth just 3 weeks ago. He was leading after the first and second rounds in really top company. Finished 4th overall, couldn't quite keep up with the Billy Horschels and the Rory McIlroys of the world. But, to finish in that lofty position, to bank £300,000, as it was, from his effort there, was particularly a good week for Baldwin. Up to 56th now in the race to Dubai, as we said, 70th for Abu Dhabi, 50th. For Dubai to make the Earth Course in November. So he's got plenty to play for. That'll be the first start he's had at the Earth Course for 10 years, should he make it. So again, another player who's got a defined target staring him in the face. And you know, a carrot to try and achieve. 21st strokes gain approach for the season. Ideal, I think. He was fifth here back in 2014. That was the year that he made it to Dubai. So perhaps he can repeat the feat this week, get us a nice each way place and bank himself a trip to Dubai later in the year. We shall see. But they're my four: Baldwin, Lacroix, Yannick Paul, and Thorbjørn Olafsson. So, Barry, you've got a couple of long shots, you said.
I'm going to copy you on the Baldwin bet. Sounds great. Nothing further to add. And then the other one that popped, just looking, went straight into the Combi stats page. And just bearing in mind, you know, a little bit of pokes of recent form. Jeff Winter. Did I just steal one of yours, Steve?
Just leave me out of this now.
it's purely like the last two years here, eighth and second, just screaming. And like last week's miscut it's at the Dunhill, so it's fine. But before that, has a nice run of 27th, 33rd, 17th, one miscut, and 18th. So there's some good form there.
Pretty sweet tee to green as well. You look at those numbers. He's hitting the ball nice with the approaches, and the tee to green game's nice. Surprisingly enough, I'm on him 90-1 with Bet365.
An excellent putter.
Yep, plenty to like with Winther. Yep, now get that. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Well, I'm copying you, Barry, on Hao Tong Lee. So I'm in at 90-1. All of these are with Bet365 each way extra, eight places each way. Hao Tong Lee, he's so sparky, isn't he? He's just ridiculously sparky. You know, seven miscuts and then something clicks. I would not be surprised to see Hao Tong Lee go well after playing so well up in Scotland last week. As listeners will clearly know, I'm on Jeff Winter. We were on Henrik Norlander, weren't we, last week, Barry? Kind of started well and then kind of went in reverse. But another horse for a course. Jeff Winter's your man. I'm following both of you in on Baldwin. When we were there at Wentworth on the Friday poll, I can remember catching up with Baldwin. I think he was on the 13th tee. And he was leading the BMW PGA by like four strokes.
Yeah. He played some cracking stuff.
He's got a lot to play for. He's just obviously in very good nick. So Baldwin makes a lot of sense, especially when you look at the prices of recent winners here that seem to be around that 66 to 100 mark. The other one that's just crept into my mind, and I can back him at 80-1, eight places each way, I believe. I'm literally clicking the button now on my Betfred account. I'm backing him via there. Pick your places market, eight places each way, is Beef. What about a bit of British Beef over in Paris? A bit of Le Bouf. I think Andrew Johnston, you know, I've always had Johnston down as a player that plays better on tougher tests.
Yeah, that's precisely his game, yeah. He hasn't been consistently playing again, has he? You know, we know that he's had his struggles and... you know, he pulls out of the odd tournament quite late on. So, you know, he's got to feel comfortable with it all. But when he does play, he has been quite competitive, hasn't he, over the last
year? He has 18th at the Belfry. That third place behind Matt Wallace.
Yep.
Where was that? Denmark?
No, it was after that, wasn't it? Was it the Czech Republic? I forget now. He pushed him all the way, didn't he?
That's right.
He really did.
Miscut, and then 40th last time out at Wentworth, and he's got a top 25 and a top 30 here. So I just get the feeling with Andrew Johnston that clearly he's finding form. He's putting really, really well when you look at his numbers. Mm. Would not be surprised to see him grind himself into a sort of top eight finish. So yeah, those are my four. Johnston at 80s, then Hao Tong Lee, Jeff Winter at 90s, both of them, and Matthew Baldwin at 100-1. We are clearing the decks this week on Baldwin.
Yeah, interesting to see how Houghton Lee goes. I've kind of, in my mind now, you know, I backed him, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and his long game was great and his putting was awful, which is kind of the complete opposite of what I expected. Should his long game be good this week, then yes, he undoubtedly has a chance because he's that kind of sparky character, isn't he? I in my mind now, I'm kind of thinking I'm going to wait until there's massively wide fairways and he can get away with any kind of shot because the rest of his game is often good enough to see him round. But I wouldn't surprise me because he is that kind of character who can go and pluck it out. So we'll see. We'll see. But yes, that's us on that, I think, Steve.
We move forward to the Black Desert Championship. I know you're as excited as I am. I got so excited. I backed 6 players this way. I am so anally retentive. It is unbelievable. I went into this week thinking, well, no, I don't know anything about the course. I don't know, you know, who's got any idea what's going to happen here. And just as I started unpicking, in the end, I was like a kid in a sweet shop. It was just like a very, 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 very weak field. And there were various different things I just grabbed onto. So let's talk you through the Black Desert Championship, shall we? Mm. The Black Desert Resort in Ivins, Utah. I mean, we are in the back of beyond here. Apparently, it's 150 miles northeast of Las Vegas. Over the Utah barrier. The Black Desert Resort is owned by Reef Capital Partners, who clearly aren't short of a few bob, because they have brought the PGA Tour here for 2024, 25, 26 and 27. And there is an LPGA event here early next year. Now, the course was finished last year, and all of the kind of support facilities that you need around the course were still being absolutely hurriedly finished up to about 2 to 3 months ago, like a 500-room hotel and the likes, because this is literally the middle of nowhere. It's an interesting course, though. This is Tom Weisskopf's, by the way, they've the supporting facility, 800-room hotel. So it's going to be an interesting tournament this week. I don't know where they're getting the crowds from, but they're probably airlifting them in by the looks of it. Because I don't think it's the most built up area in the United States. The course itself is Tom Weisskopf's last 93rd and final golf course design. He designed it with Phil Smith. It was finished last year. So there's loads of YouTube videos out there, and some of the videos from 2022, they were only playing 9 holes because the other 9 weren't even finished. So it's a public golf course. It's a very intriguing golf course as well. The Black Desert is basically, it's lava flow from where we normally go to these desert golf courses and you get rocks, sand and cacti and wild animals just off the, you go fairway, rough, cactus, sand, rocks. Over here, it's completely different. You go fairway, rough, and then lava. Just black lava rock and it's everywhere. They actually built the course within the lava outcrops and apparently, they got through so many million tons of dynamite to level it and do whatever they needed to do with it. And then they've laid 3 feet of sand on the lava. And on top of that, you then get, of course, the grass and the golf course. It's crazy, really. It must have cost an absolute fortune.
Yeah, sounds it.
Interesting facts. And these are facts that actually I built into my selection. Clearly, this is desert-style golf. Another fact, 3,100 feet above sea level. So we're talking altitude golf. By my reckoning, Paul, that's around about 6-7% in terms of extra distance on your shots.
Yeah, it's not up there with the very.
It's not Mexico City, but
no, but it's yeah, there's certainly a factor there. Yeah, 5-7 would be my kind of guess.
Yeah,
so in that bracket. Yeah.
So, on the scorecard, 7,371 yards. By my mathematics, we're talking around about a 6,900-yard par 71.
Yep.
What do you think we're going to get this week, Paul? Barry?
For a winning score?
Yeah.
Deep. Deep, deep.
25, the 27.
It could be. If it's the first, they're not... They're always going to err on the side of friendliness of the course and setup rather than difficulty. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I watched a load of amateurs go around here, and literally on a lot of the holes, they're good amateurs. Clearly, they have a following on YouTube or whatever. They know what they're doing. You know, they're shooting, I don't know, 2-3 over around 9 holes. They're no mugs. And the amount of short chips I saw on approach shots and just tiny little wedges in were amazing. They weren't playing the full distance of the course, I grant you. I'm classifying this as a resort-level scoring course, clearly. I think 25 under, something around those lines. Desert style, altitude, and it's a short golf course, 7,371 yards, par 71 at altitude. So we're looking at a 6,900 yards, par 71. Interestingly enough, 3 par 5s, which are seriously going to be in play at altitude, and 2 drivable par 4s.
Just to jump in, I wonder if there's a market for a 59.
Potentially, yes.
Could be a week that you'll see one.
I haven't even finished the details here, Barry. You listen to this. They quote the average yards here for fairway width at 30. But read around it. Even I'm reading quotes going being attributed back to Tom Weisskopf. Some of the holes have got 70 to 100 yard wide fairways. That equates itself to 51 acres of fairway grass, which is even more than the plantation course at Kapalua. So that makes sense. Big wide fairways, yeah, and 7,000 square feet on average bent grass greens. So, yeah, 59 in play, very, very little wind. The only thing that defends this golf course, and I have seen it on some of these videos, it's howling 40, 45 mile an hour winds this week. You're going to get the usual desert breeze just picking up sort of 4-5 o'clock for the late starter. So if I was you, back morning, first round leader bets. But yeah, I can't see anything but a complete and utter eagle and birdie fest this week.
Yeah, sounds it.
Wide fairways, sub 7,000 yards, 3 par 5s and 2 drivable par 4s. Oh, par 3s. 150 yards.
So if anybody finds a market where I can bet on for 59 being shot this week or lower, please tweet us.
Mm. Good shout.
Where do you... I mean, this is it. In the end, I got completely and utterly carried away. For me, I can see... It's difficult... One of the courses I looked at, which I thought had some kind of links to this, I mean, clearly everyone will shout TPC Scottsdale because, again, that is a Weisskopf design in the desert over in Arizona. That, again, is around about this length. I think it's slightly shorter, 7,200. It's slightly lower in terms of its altitude, so it's kind of roughly the same. I can see Phoenix form being a thing here. I can definitely see TPC Summerling form being something here because that's only 125 miles away. Again, a 71, a desert golf course. For me, that course, though, is far more based around accuracy off the tee because Summerlin is a tight track in terms of driving landing areas. You know, that typical Tom Kim golf course, who's won there the last two times. This, though, is same kind of length, but in ridiculously wide fairways, bigger greens. I just genuinely think that power could be a big deal this week. So I've got three at 35 to one or less. Two of them are big, big hitters, and one of them's Lucas Glover. So I got 35 to 1 with Boyle Sports, eight places each way, on Lucas Glover. Oh, I know Paul is particularly sweet on again this week. Just by the by, his only nationwide tour win way back in 2003, for new listeners, that is now the Corn Ferry Tour, was the 2003 Gila River Classic, which they played at the Whirlwind Golf Club in the neighbouring state of Arizona. And he hasn't got a stellar desert record, but interestingly enough, that he has TPC Summerlin for, which makes sense with Glover because he really is a accurate driver, apart from when he's on the par fives, Paul, an accurate driver last week, who is absolutely fantastic when on form with his approach play and if the putter's working. So at TPC Summerlin, last four visits there, he's finished third, seventh and ninth. He's got six PGA Tour wins, which in this field is probably the most of anyone. I'm sure there's probably someone out there that's got more. But a lot of those wins for me are relevant as well because three of them are on bent grass putting surfaces, including TPC Deer Run, the John Deere Classic in 2021. And last year, he was winning the Wyndham Championship and a FedEx Cup playoff event. So, you know, this guy isn't afraid of winning recently. So I thought 35 to 1 on Lucas Glover was a decent price. So he's my plotter. And then I've just got two that hit the ball a hell of a long way. They are good with wedges on hand from 150 yards and in. And I think that just with their brute power, they could do some serious damage here. One is Ryan Fox. I got him at 33 to 1 with Bet365, eight places each way. I mean, Ryan Fox, this is a guy that won the BMW PGA Championship 12 months ago. And he's now scratching around at the Black Desert Championship on the PGA Tour in a kind of alternate level event. For me, he's a grade above most of these players. And he just seems to be finding form. 11th last week. I know you said you were worried about him carrying an injury, but one thing I did notice, Paul, last week was he was hitting the ball long again, long and pretty straight, gaining lots of strokes off the tee. He hasn't got stellar Middle Eastern desert form, but he did win the 2022 Ras Al Khaimah Classic down at the Alhambra Golf Club. And he's also got some half-decent form on the longer golf course that they used to play in Saudi. So there's enough there for me to go. I just think that Fox is clearly motivated. He could see, you know, he'll be the kind of guy that's going for this 51st to 60th spot on the PGA Tour to get into those early signature level events. Also, to get back into the world's top 50 if he can, for a Masters invite pre-Christmas. So I'm on Fox. And the other one I like, completely different ends of the spectrum in terms of experience, is Michael Teor Bjornsson. 35 to 1 I got with Betfred, eight places each way via their extended pick your place market. Seven-time amateur winner, ex-world number one. He's won in Illinois twice, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and on his own Stanford University course. So for me, you just look at his background, a lot of it is bent grass greens or bent poa greens. Seems to like those putting surfaces more than he does Bermuda. Also, his last individual amateur win was this year in February. They played the Cabo Collegiate Invitational, which they play on a Mexican desert golf course, the Twin Dolphin Club, which reminded me of the That reminded me of the Tiger Woods course they played in the WWT last year, and they're going to play the same course this year later on in the on the tour. But yeah, Teal Bjornsson clearly gets on well with Desert Golf. And he just played very, very nicely last week. Top 10 finish on a Bermuda grass course, Bermuda golf course. I just don't think it's his cup of tea. Just reading through where he plays better, the geography, the agronomy, I think he's more into his bent grass, the Kentucky bluegrass rough will suit. And this guy has got crazy power. He's averaging 317 yards off the tee driving distance. He was over 330 for his drives last week at the Sandringham Farms. Because this golf course is built on lava and sand, apparently, and surprise, surprise, you don't get much natural rain in Utah. Apparently, there's also plenty of roll on the fairways this week. So this Teal Bjornsson guy could be seriously getting the ball out there. And with fairways, some of which are 70 yards plus wide, I think Teal Bjornsson could really cause some damage. So those are my three at 50 to 1 or shorter. They're all 1.5 points each way. I've got Lucas Glover, Ryan Fox, and Michael Teal Bjornsson. Barry, I know this is going to be completely new to you. I would assume your research has been quite short on this.
Limited.
Are there any players towards the top of the market that you are backing this week at the Black Desert?
I'm tempted by your persuasive argument on Glover. My partisan nature is telling me I need to back Seamus Power, so I will do so. I've always kind of had a connection between him and kind of that Desert Vegas vibe. Mm-hmm. So those would be my two kind of shorties, and the rest is a little bit of a struggle right now, but maybe just like fun bets on like Zach Blair, Joel Damon, just because they're kind of favorite players of mine. But yeah, I kind of take it fairly light on this one.
I could see Bombers thriving here, and I can also see Accurate Approach Plotters. And it was interesting, at that event that Eric Van Rooyen won last year, which was a desert golf course, a lot longer than this, but fair, past Barlam golf course, wide fairways, down in Mexico. He ended up having a shootout with Matt Kuchar. And I mean, if you want two players that are completely extremes, golfers, Kuchar and Van Rooyen are pretty poles apart. So I think shorter plotters can just score as well around here. But Bombers could literally blast away.
Well, they could be just driving and pitching.
Yeah, exactly. You got it right. I saw a lot of pitches here just on the amateur stuff I kept watching. You know, within 20, 30 yards on the up. You know, the uphill to the, because a lot of the greens here are raised. So I reckon you can literally pitch it into these sort of mounds that lead you up onto the putting surface quite a lot around here. And then just a chip and a putt. A lot of these guys, like a Glover, will just lay back, find the middle of the fairway, and he will be able to do it this week on the par fives ball. I mean, if he's not hitting fairways that are 70 yards wide, we've got serious problems. And then he just uses his amazing approach play and he's putting well. So I can see it from both sides of the story. Who are you backing anyone 50 to 1 or shorter, Paul?
Only Glover. And like you, I took the 35 to 1 with eight places, thinking that was a good combination. And then the spread firms came up and dangled 50 to 1 with six places as well. And I've had to back him twice effectively. So in the spirit of responsible gambling, I've only got one other selection after that who's longer. But yeah, I've effectively doubled up on Glover because having backed him at 35s, and I seriously think he's going to have a good week. I suspect he goes very, very close or wins this golf tournament. So to have the option of 50 to 1 out there was too good for me to turn down. So
I love that.
Yeah.
It's like, I want one thing. It's like buy four for the price of three. Like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. How can I say no? But yeah, I don't think I can add a great deal to your justification for him, but his form's progressive. All of the elements that you want to see in his statistics are progressive. His approach play, his tee to green plays, putting, and his putting actually reminds me very much of when we saw him win the, it was the Wyndham and the St. Jude, wasn't it, last year in successive weeks. The numbers are almost identical in terms of his position in the field and his raw strokes gained. So he's found that little spark again, which is all Lucas Glover needs, is that little spark with a putter, and he is extremely dangerous. So
when he was staring down his approach shot on 18 on Sunday, he's got go, but do your thing, boy. And the commentator said he wasn't aiming for 3 foot there. He was aiming for a hole out.
Yeah.
And you could see he was disappointed when it didn't go in and it ended up 4 feet short.
Yeah.
So he's clearly got the juices in him. And because he knows he's putting well. Yeah. And it does, as we know with a lot of these guys, these great ball strikers, you can go months where they're severely negative on the greens. And then when they're feeling it with the putter, they know that they can seriously contend.
Yeah. Time to go and make a few dollars.
Yeah. Well, with him, he crept into the world's top 50 with that third place last week. He crept in at 48th. That, again, I don't know if you're new to golf, if you're a new listener to the podcast and you're new to golf, top 50 at the end of the year is, and we can have this debate about the world rankings being out of date and useless and whatever, but the fact of the matter is, the current world ranking system, if you are in the top 50, as of the end of the calendar year, you do get a Masters invite, which is a huge deal for a lot of these players, and it would be a huge deal for Lucas Glover. So at 48, a win or even a second place or something big this week will pretty much guarantee a top 50 spot for the end of the year. Big carrot. I've got one at 60-1. He's within Rob Bolton's rankings when it comes to rookies. He sits in eighth place between Ryo Hitsatsune, who we were talking about earlier, winning the Open de France last year, and Rico Hoey. His name is Chandler Phillips. I've been keeping an eye on Chandler this year. The sort who recently has been driving the ball moderately long, but very, very straight. And the thing I like about Phillips is when his game's on song, he's got a very good approach game from short to middle length irons, and also very good with his long game. So if he's going for par fives in two, he's got the kind of game that can get the ball close to greens or on greens for eagle tries or two putt birdies. The other thing I like about him is he's a particularly good putter. And actually, when you look at the strength of this field, which is incredibly, incredibly poor, I think this par 71 format will suit him because he ranks sixth for par four birdie or better conversion in this field. He's 16th on tour, and he's 12th for birdie average in this field, which is in the top 30 on tour. So he can make birdies. He's great on par fours. So the 71 format and the extra four par fours as opposed to Jackson last week will help out Phillips. His par fives are the weakness, really, with Phillips. Also, just look at his Corn Ferry history, Chandler Phillips. Top seven finishes in Indiana, Ohio, Montana, New Jersey. So that, to me, suggests the guy that's very happy with Northern United States agronomy, which is mainly bent grass, a little bit of poana thrown in. Kentucky bluegrass rough, not an issue at all. Just think that he will go better here at somewhere like this bent grass golf course than he did last week at the Sanderson Farms, where I think he was kind of mid-pack, top 30, something like that. So I do like the look of Chandler Phillips. I got him at 60-1 with Bet365, 8 places each way. Now, there's one here, there's a name here that... This is the kind of guy, Paul, that I think you would like to go for because his inbound form is atrocious. But when you just scratch under the surface, this guy has got the pedigree that plenty in this field haven't got. Now, when he has won, and he's won four times on the PGA Tour, Across my rankings going into those events, he's ranked 50th, 53rd and 36th for strokes gained current form. Basically saying he was playing kind of okay, but he wasn't great. You know, he wasn't coming into winning tournaments coming off a third place finish or fifth place finish or a 7th place finish. He was coming in off missed cuts and 40th and all this kind of stuff. The last three wins he's had have come at 160-1, 66-1 and 100-1. That win at 100-1 was this year, and it was the 2024 Waste Management Phoenix Open, which had an absolutely stellar field at a Tom Weisskopf golf course down in or up in Scottsdale, Arizona. He's also finished second at that particular tournament last year in 2023. So you could say he doesn't mind a Tom Weisskopf design. I got 80-1, and there's absolutely no interest in him whatsoever this week with Ladbrokes, 8 places each way, on Nick Taylor. Interesting player, Taylor. And I know that you deal, because you build the predictor models, but what grabbed me was, when you just look at the predictor data, he ranks first in this field for resorts on West Coast courses, first in the field for strokes gain, for results on short courses, second for results on desert courses, and second for results at altitude on the PGA Tour in this field over the past 5 years. So I just thought, 80-1, why not?
Yep.
Likely to miss the cut, and then likely to... It'd be one of those ones where you're sitting there on a Friday evening over a beer, and you're going, oh, Nick Taylor's just popped into the top five on the leaderboard. And you'd be sitting there going, oh, Nick Taylor. So I thought I'd cover him off. Have you got any interest in him this week, or...?
He knows that's a win, doesn't he? And that's a skill... that many of the others in this field don't seem to have. I backed him a couple of weeks back, wasn't it?
After you did at Silverado, you missed the cut.
Yeah, after
But at least he's had a competitive outing, which I think is important at these events.
But, you know, I think I said something similar at the time in that the incoming form wasn't great, but there's a motivation there and, you know, there was enough to tie him together. And you're right, statistically, if you look back historically of where and how he's won, there's lots to like, so... I'm not on him, but I can see the logic there, Steve.
His wins have come off preceding results of missed cut 49th, missed cut 71st. So for me, he's banging line. The reason he's playing this week, again, top 50 in the world. He's currently 55th in the world. And also, he's sitting... at 50, he's sitting just outside. Oh no, he's just inside his top 10. I think he's in the top 60 on the FedEx Cup at the moment, which means 51 to 60 get these two starts that would be at Riviera and Pebble Beach at the start of next year.
Yeah.
So he's got reasons to play. I just think Taylor's the one that just might pop up. I've then got one 125-1, a point each way. You know, these desert, I just love to throw out the term desert rat. Well, this guy is a complete and utter desert rat. I could go through all of his results. It'll take 15 minutes in terms of top 20 finishes on desert golf courses in the Western United States. He's currently just inside the PGA Tour top 150, which would give him conditional PGA Tour status for next year. Basically, can't pick where he wants to play, just backfills into weaker events. A great result this week, though, could get him on the cusp of that top 125, where you can basically play your own schedule. The Scotsman who lives at altitude in Denver, Colorado, Martin Laird. He was 13th for tee to green last week at the Sanderson Farms. He was also 6th at halfway. And if you said to me over a pint, what surface does Martin play better on in terms of, you know, putting and results, I would say to you straight away, bent grass or bent poa greens, which we've got this week. Last week, champion Bermuda grass, that isn't Martin Laird. And sure enough, I think he lost almost two strokes on the greens, but his tee to green game is rounding. I've seen interviews with him. He knows he needs to come to the party and get some big results. So Martin Laird, 125-1, I backed him with Betfred 8 places each way. I will shut up and leave you two to finish.
Yep, I've got one more, Barry. I'll rattle through that quick and then we'll bring you in. Hayden Springer, I've backed. You're finished. Okay, well, yeah. I'll finish off with Hayden Springer then. 80-1. He seems the streaky sort who can blow a bit hot and cold and could go well this week, I think. 10th and 7th earlier in the year at the Rocket Mortgage Classic and the John Deere Classic. That was in June and July and then went right off the boil. 8th last week at the Sanderson Farms, though. He's up to 115th in that full series list as a result of that. And as you say, it's kind of one of those where he's just got to make sure that he keeps his foot on the floor for another week or so, and then he should be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
The statistic that caught me last week, particularly with reference to coming to a course where we're going to have to make a lot of birdies, is that he topped the strokes game putting stats last week.
Interesting.
So, yeah, if it's going to be a...
especially for a guy that's top 10 for driving distance on tour.
Yeah, there's lots going for him, I think. Won twice on the Canadian tour, kind of late summer last year, August, September. So a little bit later right now, but not a massive amount. So, yeah, I think if he puts it all together this week and putts as well as he did last week, then he could feature in the each way places or better, 80-1. I know you've been on him before in the relatively recent past.
Yeah, Springer's a decent player. Mm. You'd like to think he's going to keep his car, but a 115, yeah, he's still got to work for it, hasn't he? I mean, like we said, he's 10th in the rookie rankings. He still hasn't guaranteed that card just yet at 115.
Yeah, so he was just outside. I think he jumped up 12 spots last week, courtesy of his result. So he knows that's positive for his chances, but yeah, one more effort.
I will throw this out there before we close the podcast, and it's a very anally retentive point, and I know a lot of people would shoot it down, but FedEx Cup ranking of winners of these kind of events recently: Luke List last year, 119. EVR won in Mexico, he was 125th, he was right on the bubble. Camilo Villegas won 47. Ludvig Åberg was 96th. Patton Kizzire this year, 132nd. And Kevin Yu last week, 96th. There's a lot of high numbers there.
Mm.
You know, a lot of the winners recently aren't your guys that are 20-1 in these events. It's players that are deeper in the markets and, you know, they're playing for their futures. Oh, no, I wouldn't categorise Kevin Yu in that category because he was 96 last week in the FedEx Cup. So he's not going to fall. He was never going to fall outside the top 125, but clearly just found something. Maybe it was just the fact that, you know, he could go into the event completely relaxed and just play golf.
Yeah.
In that spot. But you're not seeing many winners that are, you know, in that have already got top 5th in these weaker fields. You don't seem to get many players so far across this year and last year where people are just cruising in, they've locked their card already, top 50 and all this stuff. It tends to be guys that are a lot deeper in the Agile FedEx Cup standing so far. Just an interesting angle, I thought.
Yep.
Right. That's us. I hope your bets go well. I'm not going to mention DraftKings after last week.
Yeah. No, absolutely right. Yeah, best of luck, guys.
You too, boys.
Best of luck, Barry. Thanks for your time and attention on the podcast this week. What have you got next week, Paul?
It's the Andalusia Masters at over in Soto Grande. So we've got John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton playing next week. David Puig as well. So, yeah, another good field.
Playing very nice golf, isn't he, Mr. Puig?
Indeed.
And then I'd say it's one of the star events in the fall on the PGA Tour next week. We've got the Shriners Children's Hospitals Open in Las Vegas, which is always a tournament we like to get stuck into. Tom Kim going for a three-peat. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back me misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system. It's the golf betting system.